The Loft Theatre Company presents Bubble Fever, an audio play by David Fletcher, based on the works of Daniel Defoe and other sources of the period. The play begins in London in 1720.
I rarely saw my father truly angry. He would rage about many things, but there was always that twinkle in his eye. The wit that was in so much of his writing was fundamental to the man. It's who Daniel Defoe was. Oh, his sense of mischief was infectious, and we loved him for it. I loved him for it. So all the shouting, the indignation, the disapproval, I could see it was all for play, and that beneath it he was always smiling. But this time it was different. This anger went deeper. He had been a supporter of the South Sea Company from the start, but when the stock price rose with dazzling speed, he knew it to be a folly. So when the bubble burst, he was not in the least surprised. He saw the frenzy of the people as a disease, and he pitied them when they discovered they had been betrayed. He thought he was immune from betrayal, that he could see clearly through the duplicity. But even he did not see the depth of the deceit. And when he did see it, when he felt it, it was the silence of his anger that was so frightening. For those of us close to him, for me, because Daniel Defoe was not a silent man. When I look back to the beginning of 1720, before the bubble, before the crash, life seemed so calm. Well, not calm, perhaps, but happy. Nothing was ever calm in the Defoe household.
Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Hannah, my coat and shoes, now.
Coming, Father.
It's here. I know it's here.
Here's your coat and your shoes.
What?
Your coat and shoes.
What? Oh, yes, thank you.
What's the matter?
My speech about stock jobbing. I'm late and I can't find my speech.
I'm not surprised.
What?
Let me help.
I've told you, I don't want anyone messing with my papers.
Messing with this? Now stop. Stop! You finish getting dressed and I will find your speech. And then while you're away, I will sort out this mess.
Oh, all right.
Thank you. Come on, don't just stand there. Get dressed. What is stock jobbing, anyway?
Officially, it is the buying and selling of stocks and shares.
And unofficially?
It's a game. A hazard.
A hazard?
A trade made up of sharp and trick and managed with impudence and banter. Six or eight hedge funders combine together and, by pretended buying or selling among themselves, raise or sink the stock of the company to what extravagant price they wish. They wheedle others, sometimes to buy, sometimes to sell as their occasions require, and with little regard to the intrinsic value or the circumstances of the company.
How has this been allowed to happen?
It is an abhorrence to think that the scandalous mystery of playing the stock market should thus grow upon the nation, that ever the English should suffer themselves to be imposed on by the new invented ways of a few needy mercenaries who can turn all trade into a lottery and make the stock exchange a gaming table. We need to watch the price of stock of the South Sea Company in particular. It is becoming, how shall I put it, fashionable.
Where are you giving the speech?
At Jonathan's.
Jonathan's?
Jonathan's Coffee House in Exchange Alley.
Giving a speech in a coffee house in an alley?
It is so much more than a coffee house, and so much more than an alley. The centre of the stock-jobbing world is in Exchange Alley. The limits are easily surrounded in about a minute and a half. Stepping out of Jonathan's into the alley, you turn your face full south, moving on a few paces, and then turning due east, you advance to Garraway's. From thence, going out at the other door, you go on still east into Birchin Lane, and then, halting a little at the Swordblade Bank, you immediately face to the north, enter Cornhill, visit two or three petty provinces there in your way west, and thus, having boxed your compass and sailed round the whole stock-jobbing globe, you turn into Jonathan's again. And so, as most of the great follies of life oblige us to do, you end just where you began.
Oh, is this your speech?
Yes, give it to me, quickly.
Oh, Father, slow down. Come on, up you get. There, that's better. So go to Jonathan's.
To Jonathan's.
Slowly.
Susanna, coffee.
Good morning, Mr. Sedley and Mr. Cavendish. Good morning. Are we all well this morning?
Well enough, and soon to be better with another dish of your delicious coffee.
And will there be a talk today?
Yes, we have the writer Daniel Defoe joining us soon.
The author of Robinson Crusoe.
And the editor of Appleby's Journal.
How exciting. Oh, he is quite the talk of the town.
And here he is.
Welcome, Daniel.
Susanna, some coffee for Daniel.
We are honoured to have you in our coffee house, Mr. Defoe.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry to be late.
We are very pleased to see you.
Whatever the time.
Sedley.
Daniel knows I am his greatest admirer. I read his journal every week.
Your piece on the plague in France this week was most engaging.
Thank you, gentlemen.
So, Daniel, what is it to be today?
I heard that it was to be the stock exchange.
You are somewhat near the mark.
Are you going to attack the stock jobs?
There are no secrets.
We have the sharpest ears in the city.
You have indeed. Are you ready?
Ready.
Gentlemen, your attention, if you will. The general cry against stock jobbing as a public nuisance has been so long without a remedy that the jobbers, hardened in crime, are at last come to exceed all bounds. But now, sleeping justice will awake and take some notice of them and make it absolutely necessary for the government to demolish them. But before I come to the needful ways for restraining those people, I think it will be of some service to expose their practices to common view, that the people may see a little what kind of dealers they are.
I've been looking forward to this so much.
First, if you talk to them of their occupation, there is not a man of them who will deny it is a trade founded in fraud, born of deceit, and nourished by trick, cheat, wheedle, forgeries, falsehoods, and all sorts of delusions. Sham reports and false news are things that have been often trumped upon us.
Trumped? That's good.
Coining false news, this way good, that way bad. Whispering imaginary terrors, frights, hopes, expectations, and then preying upon the weakness of those whose imaginations they have wrought upon. If they meet with a cull that has money to lay out, they catch them at the door and whisper.
My dear Antonia, here is a great piece of news. It is not yet public. It's worth 1,000 guineas but to mention it. I'm heartily glad I met you, but it must be as secret as the black side of your soul, for they know nothing of it yet in the coffee house. If they should, stock would rise 10% in a moment, and I warrant you, South Sea stock will be £130 in a week's time after it is known.
Well, prithee, sir, what is it?
I will let you into the secret, upon your honour to keep it until you hear it from other hands. Why, the news is this.
Are you sure of it?
Sure of it? Why, if you will take your coach and go up to the secretary's office, you may be satisfied of it yourself and be down again in 2 hours.
Away goes the gudgeon, with her head full of wildfire and a squib in her brain. And coming to the place, meets a crony at the door, who ignorantly confirms the report, and so sets fire to the mine that, without giving herself time to consider, she hurries back full of the delusions, dreaming of nothing but of getting £100,000. In this elevation, she meets her broker, who throws more fireworks into the mine and blows her up to so fierce an inflammation that she employs him instantly to accept stock of any kind and almost at any price. She buys, the price falls, and the jobbers make their profit at her expense. The cull, finding herself bitten to the tune of £30,000, then stops short and bethinks herself.
What am I doing? I've paid away all this money like a fool. Is not the whole doctrine of stockjobbing a science of fraud? And are not all the dealers thieves and pickpockets? Have not I heard them say they know their employment was a branch of highway robbery? In a word, they're all a gang of rogues and cheats.
And thus we are all degenerated into bubble and bite. And the exchange has become a mere gaming stage, where instead of merchants carrying out useful commerce, we see throngs of setters and cullies sharping and cheating one another. Now they stand ready, as occasion offers and profit presents, to stock-job the nation.
And cozen the Parliament.
Ruffle the Bank of England.
Run up and run down stocks and put the dice upon the whole town.
Let them job, trick and cheat one another. And let them be bubbled by them that knows no better. But for God's sake, don't let the important affairs of the state come under their wicked clutches.
Bravo, Daniel.
Yes, bravo.
Hello, Father. Was your speech a success?
I believe it was. They enjoy some controversy with their coffee. Double the stimulation.
I wish I could have been there.
They are unruly folk. Your presence may have led them to improper levels of exuberance.
How exciting!
Even for someone as intelligent and resourceful as you, it might have been more discomforting than exciting.
Oh, well.
But look, you have been busy.
I have created order out of chaos.
Will I be able to find anything?
More easily than before. And if you can't, just ask.
And what's this, Hannah?
I thought it would be good to keep a close eye on the price of the South Sea stock. So I found this old blackboard in the cellar and I'm starting a chart. A picture makes it clearer.
Well...
So this is yesterday when the price was £170. See that cross there? And today, Monday the 27th of February, it is £174. And then I join the points with a line, like this.
Are you enjoying this?
Yes, in a way I am. But I feel I shouldn't be.
Why?
It feels as if I'm enjoying someone else's discomfort. I'm looking on as the world is being infected with a peculiar kind of recklessness.
You are so right, my clever girl.
Well, that's how it seems to me. As if they are sick.
They are. Their heads are strangely disordered, and they can dream of nothing but getting large estates. We have had lately a fresh instance of this fashionable distemper. For no sooner were the books opened at a coffee house near the Royal Exchange to take in subscriptions on an airy project that promised mighty advantages to the subscribers, but the house was immediately so thronged that there was no coming near the door. A barber at the next house, observing with what eagerness they pressed for admission, proposed to let them in through his shop a back way, paying down a shilling a man entrance. So in they crowded. But they were as far from getting at the books as before, so that, what with the want of air, the heat of the season, and unwholesome vapours occasioned by the vast concourse of people, they found themselves under a necessity of paying the honest barber sixpence apiece to let them out again.
It is so strange to see the world passionately pursue those very people whose design, they must surely know, is to bubble them. What advantage is it to the nation in general to have things sell for more than they are worth?
A very good question.
And if new shares are created at market at double the intrinsic value, what happens when the price falls?
And that is an even better one.
So...
I fear we will find out soon enough.
More coffee, gentlemen.
Of course.
Thank you, Susanna.
So, all this noise about the South Sea Company, is it making lots of money?
Lots and lots.
More than you could ever imagine, dear Susanna.
And what is the secret of its success?
Secret is the word.
I have heard that government debt is involved, but it is something of a mystery.
I thought it was a trading company.
It does that too.
Trading in what?
Manufactured goods, slaves.
Slaves?
Well, there is much money to be made.
I had no idea.
The rate of Negroes in America has, in late years, risen from £20 to £35 a head. And if we allow 50,000 Negroes a year to be carried away, then...
50,000?
Then the value of this trade, at a medium of £25, amounts to no less than £1,250,000 per annum. This is a trade of infinite advantage.
You are forgetting the cost. I've heard that the company makes little money from all this.
That's true.
Little money? All those slaves? And for little money? Doesn't sound decent to me.
Decent?
Do the people who are buying and selling South Sea stock know that slavery is involved?
Some of them might. But most will just have their eyes set on a fortune.
And even if they did know, I don't suppose that they would care.
How could they not care? Oh, it's not right, Mr. Sedley. It's not right.
Monday, the 11th of April. South Sea stock, £285. Good morning, Father.
Good morning, my dear.
The start of a new week.
And a new edition of the journal.
Do you have ideas of what to write?
Always.
Will it be about the bubble?
It will indeed. And I have just the thing. Yesterday, I witnessed the infection spreading out of control.
Where did you go?
I took a turn over the fields to a neighbouring church to hear a reverend clergyman of my acquaintance preaching a sermon. When he had done, the psalm sung, the blessing given, the bows and curtsies made, and the people beginning to move out, I observed an unusual reaching over from one pew to another among the people in the church. Some were whispering and some were talking at more distance. It looked as if there had been some extraordinary thing happening in the parish. So, I moved closer.
Well, Lady Mary, has your ladyship sold your stock?
No, my dear Catherine, I have not indeed.
But why? I heard it was 200 by 4 o'clock and 226 at night. The people are distracted.
That's true, but Sir Robert assures me it will be a great deal higher.
Say you so? Is Sir Robert of that mind? Nay, then I'll stay a little longer too. Otherwise, I was resolved to have gone into town in the morning and to sell all mine, for 'tis a devilish price, that is certain.
I strove to hear as much of this as I could, but was forced on by the crowd and so came out of the church. But when I came into the churchyard, you may be sure it was as bad. The place was spread with little committees, and all the subject was the sudden rise of the stock. To what a strange possession are we all come, that not the Sabbath day nor the very church can have an influence on us as equal to that of the price of stocks.
Strange indeed. I also have a story to tell. I had the honour to come into a place where there was a circle of ladies of the first quality. One of the ladies was lamenting her misfortune with respect to the South Sea stock. Others had been let into the secret in time and had bought early. One lady had bought £5,000 stock at 130, another £3,000 at 150, but this lady was left out. And it was apparent it touched her very soul with the grief of it, for she talked herself into a perfect agony with it, now in a passion, then in tears, and then out of both, and then in jest, and then every part over again, like a lunatic. And then I discovered that this lady had £10,000 at her command, and a most comfortable circumstance of a wealthy lord, and nothing in the world to wish for. But the discontent from not getting £20,000 by South Sea stock lay at the bottom of her soul.
Things are come to such a pass now in Exchange Alley that either the nation must suppress the bubbles or they will bubble the nation.
Monday, the 30th of May. South Sea stock, £530.
Good morning, Your Ladyship.
My dear Catherine.
What is the news from the Exchange?
Sir Robert tells me that this week there has been a great commotion in Exchange Alley. A multitude of new bubbles. Projects and subscriptions have been set on foot, and every single one has been publicly advertised to exceed all the rest. The several sums proposed to be raised in this manner amount to, since Saturday last, about £224 million.
Well, it is time for the suppression of Hubble Bubbles and the end to all these whimsical transactions.
I look forward to the day when one can go into the coffee house and call for a dish of tea or coffee and have it without difficulty. Whereas if you said, Jack, give me a dish of coffee, you would presently say, without taking any notice of what you called for, Your Ladyship, will you buy £1,000 stock in rock salt or the Grand Fishery?
Or when you can have a mutton cutlet broiled by the kitchen damsel without being teased with her inquiries of what new subscriptions are come out that day.
If you call a porter to send him on an errand and offer him sixpence for his pains, the dog would refuse to go, but at the same time tell you that he could furnish such and such stocks at such prices.
Tuesday the 21st of June, South Sea stock, £760.
Good morning, Father.
Good morning.
Oh dear, you don't look very well. Poor Father. I didn't hear you come home last night. I stayed up late, but sleepiness overtook me in the end. You need some water. Here, drink. Perhaps you should return to bed. If anyone calls, I will tell them you're not well, which is not untrue.
South Sea price?
760, even higher than yesterday.
Hmm.
Drink. Good.
No one.
Of course.
Where is he?
I'm sorry, Mr. Defoe is not available. Please come back on Monday.
Be quiet, girl. I will see him now.
You can't.
There you are.
I'm sorry, Father.
Who are you, pray?
My name is Florentina.
Florentina?
She wrote a letter to the journal.
Oh, yes.
I thought you could not have been so unjust to the request of a woman. I am resolved, unless you make me immediate satisfaction in your next edition, to apply myself to a different journal. So I will, that I will marry, will I, and pray take notice of it.
But what have I done? We printed your letter.
Yes, my letter, wherein I told you, among other things, that I have been long slighted by the fortune hunters of the town for no other reason but because I had not a good share of money. But that at last, heaven be praised, my card has come up trumps, and that some of my good friends, having helped me into some subscriptions in the South Sea stock, I had got some money together, and I told you the sum, in so many plain round zeros, was £20,000. I say £20,000.
Yes, I remember.
Now, was ever anything so malicious as you have been in publishing my letter, and by leaving out one zero, to reduce me to £2,000? Can you be such an ignorant son of a whore as to not know that £2,000 is no South Sea fortune? And was it not a barbarous thing of you to cut me off £18,000 at one blow? I say £18,000, for I am resolved to trust you no more with my figures.
My dear Florentina.
Now, you'll tell me it was your printer's fault, and that it was overlooked.
Well?
A good story indeed. And so I must be overlooked too, must I, for the neglect of your blockheads? And why do you not cut off another round zero and reduce me to £200? Then indeed my letter had been of as much signification towards me getting a husband.
A husband?
I design to make the best of my stock. And if I have the wherewithal to buy a South Sea husband, I will have one that has money as well as seeks money. For the men have of late put so hard upon our sex that even those that have had no money themselves had the impudence to talk of fortunes and to expect wives with portions, as if our sex was bound to the drudgery of making beggars rich.
But what do you want me to do?
Now, sir, I desire you'll do me justice and let the world know what I wrote before. That my cash is £20,000, and for the rest, leave all that to me.
A South Sea husband. The poor woman.
This fever has consumed us all, and the world has gone entirely mad.
Monday the 11th of July, South Sea stock, £900.
Here are the newspapers, gentlemen.
Thank you, Susanna.
Shall I bring you more coffee?
That would be divine.
Listen, Sedley, this paper reports that the South Sea Company, in the great hurry at the subscription last Tuesday, took above £1.5 million more than they intended.
And this one says that the Court of Directors of the South Sea Company are come to a resolution that 30% in money shall be the half-year's dividend due at Christmas next.
A 30% dividend? This must be false news.
Indeed, for the satirists are now at work. Listen to this. Whereas several bubbles are daily set on foot with pretenses of advancing trade in general, I have viewed the several schemes but find none so advantageous as a subscription for cleaning your honour's shoes. This scheme is so fair and honest and is the most beneficial that ever has been yet published. The books will be open for subscriptions on Tuesday next at Chimney Sweepers Hall, not to exceed £500,000. None to be admitted but your ancient true Britons.
August 27th, South Sea stock down to £800.
Such is the little satisfaction that mankind reaps from the views of the gains they make, that the fear of poverty does not always leave them even in the height of their wealth. An eminent instance that we have had is a certain Suffolk knight, who upon the first news of the stock falling to 800, has hanged himself for fear of starving, with about £11,000 stock in the South Sea Company.
7th of September, down to £705.
Some days ago, a gentlewoman whose great losses by the South Sea are said to have distracted her threw herself from the top of the house and instantly expired on the pavement.
10th of September, down to £640.
This week we've had about 11 considerable merchants, inclusive of a goldsmith or two, who have thought fit to shut up their exchequers for a time. Most of their disasters are placed to the account of the South Sea stock.
13th of September, down to £590.
One Thomas Allen, a noted stockjobber in Change Alley, cut his throat from ear to ear and died the same day.
16th of September, down to £535.
A statute of bankrupts has been taken out against two bankers in this city, who before the fall of the stock were reckoned worth £300,000. Many others have stopped payment, and some are gone off.
20th of September, down to £410.
A merchant who had lately acquired £100,000 of South Sea stock but was reduced by the fall, hanged himself in his chamber, but his maid, coming suddenly into the room, cut him down, and he is likely to recover.
24th of September, down to £370.
A woman of distinction, who kept a very great house in Brentford, hanged herself. The cause whereof is said to be the great fall of the South Sea stock.
1st of October, down to £290.
Between 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a mercer in Bedford Street, Covent Garden, threw himself out of a window, being under great disorder in his head, occasioned, as 'tis said, by the fall of the stocks. but it is hoped that he will recover.
10th of October, down to £255.
One Mr. Walrode, having lately lost the greatest part of his estate by the South Sea business, had thereupon the misfortune to lose his senses, and afterward his life. For on Wednesday last he laid violent hands on himself at his habitation in Greenwich.
21st of October, down to £220.
John Atkins, Esquire, son of the late Sir Henry Atkins, shot himself through the head at the East India Coffee House in Leadenhall Street. 'Tis said that he made his will the same day, and that a letter was found upon the table in the room where he shot himself. This unfortunate accident was occasioned by the fall of the South Sea. He was a gentleman of a very fair character, and is very much lamented by all that knew him.
What is the price this morning?
£210. Has it stopped falling, do you think?
Only God knows that. Or perhaps even he doesn't. But after the fall...
The reckoning.
Indeed. I was walking through Exchange Alley yesterday, and the mood is utterly changed. I met a woman who had just arrived in the city. Are you lost, madam? Can I help?
Not lost, sir, but somewhat bemused. I came to this great town of London about a month ago to see your new fashions about getting of great estates. I came to the Exchange, and there I saw a world of folks crowded together. I found them very full of business, dressed up in very fine clothes, some with gold and silver upon their coats, and others had great broad ribbons hung over their shoulders. I observed an abundance of coaches, and footmen attended them, and they looked merry and cheerful. I asked what sort of people they were, and I was always answered, they were South Sea men.
So now you find it much changed?
I do indeed. I took my walk again over those places but yesterday, and though I found the crowd was as great as ever, yet I found such a strange alteration in the folks that I was frighted at them. I concluded they were not the bubblers and stock jobbers and South Sea men that I saw before, but were either some honest, sorrowful persons come together to some great burial, or that some sickness was broke out in the place, and these walking ghosts were all infected with the plague, for never men looked so wretchedly. Here stood one against a post, with his arms across, and said not a word to anybody, but muttered to himself and shook his head. So I concluded he, good Christian, was saying his prayers, and I, being loath to disturb him, passed on. A little way off stood a man wringing his hands and crying out,
I am undone! I am undone!
So am I!
And I!
And I!
I left them, not knowing what to make of it, and went to Threadneedle Street. And there, it was 10 times worse. Then, amazed and confounded, I went to the other side of the street, where some chimney sweepers stood.
Hello, madam.
Prithee, friend, what crowd of people are these? What is the matter with them? They seem to be all angry and raving at one another as if they were distracted.
Oh, madam, you know nothing of the case. Those angry raving folks are called South Sea men. Look fair. Fair goes a South Sea man. You may see he has a South Sea face. He looks pale, frighted, angry, and out of his wits.
I shall remember a man with a South Sea face as long as I live.
It's so cold out there.
I know. I have only just now returned myself.
It is ghost-like throughout the city.
A glass of wine?
Oh, yes.
your good health.
And yours.
I have never seen the streets so strange.
And the people.
Our world is so changed.
Exchange Alley sounds no longer of thousands of pounds got in an instant, but on the contrary, all corners of the town are filled with the groans of the afflicted. Those of the trading rank who talk loudly of retiring into the country, purchasing estates there, building fine houses, and in everything imitating their betters, are now become bankrupts and have by necessity shut up their shops. Several bankers in this city have stopped payment, and some of them are declared bankrupts. How or when these misfortunes will end, the most sharp-sighted politicians don't take upon them to determine. What did you find?
I did not see much compassion move in the minds of men, one towards another, but a certain lack of concern, talking men down rather than commiserating them when they fall.
We are now arrived at a time when the South Sea affair is become a general calamity.
There are second-hand coaches, second-hand gold watches, cast-off diamond necklaces and earrings to be sold. Servants who now want places were, but a little while ago, so saucy and insolent. In a word, every place is full of the ruins of Exchange Alley.
And the desolation of the bubble adventurers.
Yes, desolation, that's the word.
I am assured that the number of distempered heads is so strangely increased for some months past by the sudden rising and sudden falling of men's fortunes under the operation of South Sea vomits and other bubble physic, that there is not room to be had among the private bedlams, or madhouses as they are called, and that it is exceedingly difficult to get a patient admitted or to get doctors of that kind to look after them.
These poor, foolish people. How they have been misled.
And so it will continue. And the disabled shopkeeper, the insolvent debtor, the declining merchant, all take this for a happy opportunity that their fall, which before was inevitable, may be now justified by laying all their disasters at the door of the South Sea stock.
I have observed also the South Sea stock is applied to another very significant use. If any man kills himself with a sword, gun or rope, or engulfs himself by a leap overboard into the Thames, the usual parenthesis of being lunatic, which was formerly used in his favour, is left out, and that of South Sea is placed in its room.
Perhaps we should apply to the coroner to have the same words inserted at the head of the casualties in every bill, something like drowned herself in the...
South Sea.
Killed by a...
South Sea sword.
Cut his throat with a...
South Sea razor.
Grief at...
The fall of South Sea stock.
Scalded to death in a...
In a South Sea cauldron.
Shot himself with a...
South Sea pistol.
Killed by excessive drinking of...
South Sea gin.
What a time of day to come calling.
I'll see who is there.
Send them away if you can.
There is a religious man wishes to speak with you.
Religious?
A Quaker, I think.
Intriguing. What's his name?
Jeremiah Dryboots, I think he said.
Well, show him in. I may need some South Sea gin afterwards.
Please come in.
Friend Jeremiah, you are welcome. How can I help?
Friend Daniel, do you call your paper a journal?
I'm sorry?
If thou dost not think fit to exert thy talent against our oppressors and bring forth thy arguments why thy rulers should execute justice upon the wicked, even upon the people called the South Sea Directors, how wilt thou maintain the title in thy paper and be called a journal? Their offences are daily before our eyes, and the punishment due thereto ought to be daily before their eyes. And if thou wilt not bear thy testimony against them, thou art no journal for my money, I assure thee, nor for my reading. In truth, thou hast seemed to be like one of those wicked ones who, they say, have received hush money, and verily thou oughtst to partake of their punishment.
Friend Jeremiah.
Perhaps thou standest neuter, and are not willing to meddle. If thou art such an inactive, lukewarm Christian, then thou art not of any use to thy country at all. Wherefore speakest thou of trifles, and things of meanest concern, causing us to pay our money for thy jests and thy mirth, when weeping and sadness sit upon the faces of thy neighbours?
My jest and mirths, as you call
them. Amend thy papers, friend. I advise thee, fall on the wicked with those offensive weapons of thine called pen and ink, and smite them with all thy might. And do this, I pray thee, so as that these men may fall under thy wrath as they do under the hands of thy neighbor journals.
My neighbor journals?
I recommend to thee, for the time to come, that thou shouldst put forth thy talent and tell thy friends something of those dishonest persons who have been dark counselors in these wicked devices and who have had large shares in the unjust gains which have been found therein.
Dark counselors?
Now, if thou grant me that they are guilty, and that they deserve to be smitten with thy hand, it is enough. Farewell.
Well, I think friend Jeremiah hopes I will now be his friend.
And smite the wicked with thy pen and ink.
Oh, dear.
Poor father.
People are mighty fond of shifting the blame of this matter from one another. Some tell us it is mismanagement, and these are for loading the directors of the company with all that calumny and ill nature can furnish. I have no compliment to pay to the directors, and perhaps might find out something to blame them for, or as well as other people. And for what the directors have done with all the cash they have taken in, would let them account for it to those to whom they are accountable. I am told the inquisition which is expected may go further than directors, and that all those people will be exposed who deserve to be exposed. Let the weight fall where it ought to fall.
So, are you going to smite friend Jeremiah's oppressors?
Perhaps, but this is not the time for it, and it is not where the blame truly lies.
So where would you put the blame?
The fall of stocks is owing neither to the deficiency of the South Sea scheme or the ill conduct of the directors, but to the follies and madness of the people.
How desperate it all is.
And now the blaming has started.
I am most anxious, Sedley.
Why?
It's embarrassing.
Come on, Cavendish. You can tell me. I promise I won't laugh.
I have still got some South Sea stock.
You didn't sell.
I don't know what to do.
Here is Daniel. He will know.
What will I know?
Cavendish here still has South Sea stock.
And so?
I don't know what to do.
Good people. Things have been set in false lights. Here is no fire, no destruction at hand. The South Sea stock is not vanished. The bottom is not blown up. Now that the price has fallen, the substance is more valuable than the price. So what is the matter, good people? Why are you frighted thus? It is impossible to give any answer to it, but to resolve it all into the general frenzy of the age. To talk of it as a distemper, nay, as a contagion, for it spreads like a plague. Those who are under no necessity to sell, but are taken with the common frenzy, run to sell because they see others sell. They are infected with the fear of their stock being lost, infected with the fear like a disease because others are infected. I can propose nothing in that case, but that they should be shut up, as houses infected are in the time of the plague. And they should not be suffered to come to market at all, that they might not infect others.
I am undone by this cursed stock, and therefore, as I am a loser, I ought to have liberty to speak.
What is your name?
Antonia.
Please speak, Antonia.
We ought to insist strongly to have these men brought to justice. We ought to set them forth in their proper colours, that the Parliament may see it is the universal cry of the nation, and may be convinced how necessary it is to examine this affair and to search it to the bottom, and that it admits of no delay.
Antonia, have a care what you do. It is not our business to prompt justice or lead parliaments. We shall bring ourselves into trouble. And besides, the Parliament does not need to be told their business, much less their duty. Let us humbly refer the matter to them and depend upon it that a British Parliament will always do what their Office of Representatives calls upon them to do. And if we have any grievances to be redressed, we must lay them before the House in a parliamentary way, by petition, not by libel.
Don't tell me of humbly referring things, of parliamentary ways and I know not what. Those are not my ways. I am one of them that know how to make noise enough to be heard. That is my way, and that is the only way. For if I can bring other people to make as much noise as I, oh, the Parliament will certainly hear of us, and that will bring the thing on with advantage, better than all your humble petitions.
Aye, but Antonia, this is all libelling and tumult and riot. And instead of bringing these men to justice, we shall bring ourselves to justice. We must have care of that.
Well, I will risk it. I will not leave them till I bring them to their fate. I will make the whole nation ring of them, and I will let the House of Commons see what they have done and how many thousand families are ruined and undone as I am. And anyway, you have often told Parliament what to do.
Look, Antonia, I am truly sorry you are undone. And as for making the nation ring of them, there I may join with you. But let us wait and first see whether they do not effectually inquire into all those things without us. And 'tis time enough to make a noise then.
Oh, don't tell me of waiting and staying till the Parliament does what justice requires. I tell you, justice requires that these harpies should be hanged.
Hold, Antonia, you are in a passion. You and I will talk further of that when you are a little cooler.
I shall never cool till I see them all hanged.
Hello, Father.
Is there any news?
No news, but another letter in the newspaper from Antonia.
The same complaints?
The same complaints.
I wish you would listen to me. It is known the case is before Parliament, and these complainers should cease while the case is before so great an assembly. They not only push at the directors of the company, but at the whole scheme of the South Sea itself, and would have the blood of one and the destruction of the other. That will be Antonia now.
You have invited her here.
I have indeed. I will try once more to convince her to be patient.
I will fetch her.
Welcome, Antonia.
You are wrong, so wrong.
About what?
The blame, Defoe. The blame.
What do you mean?
Do you know what this is?
Of course not.
It is the report on the South Sea bubble from the Secret Committee to the House of Commons.
How did you get that?
Never mind. It is a dung heap of corruption. You said it was the stock jobbers and the contagion of the people. But the whole thing was rotten to its core.
Sit down, Antonia.
I will not sit down. You sit down and listen to this.
All right. I am sitting and listening.
The corruption is clear right from the start. Listen. A scene of iniquity and corruption. False and fictitious entries. Entries with blanks. Entries with erasures and alterations. Leaves torn out and... Some books had been destroyed and others taken away and secreted. It says here that the directors appear to have had chiefly in view the raising and supporting the imaginary value of the stock at an extravagant price, above the real and intrinsic value thereof, for the benefit of themselves and those that were in secret with them. And upon the whole, it doth appear to your committee that the subscriptions have been managed with the utmost negligence. You see, Defoe... Corruption and incompetence at the heart of the company. You were so wrong.
Antonia,
oh, don't interrupt. Where you were right was how the corruption spread way beyond the company. they found that stock had been sold by members of Parliament, Commons and Lords, and none of them did anything to prevent the directors from taking in subscriptions at these extravagant prices. And some of them benefited personally. Here is one shocking example. About £25,000, part of the money received for the service of His Majesty's Navy, was laid out in purchasing £11,000 South Sea stock by the order and for the use of Richard Hampden Esquire, then Treasurer of His Majesty's Navy, and that £5,000 of the said £11,000 stock was sold for the benefit of the said Richard Hampden in a very short time after it was bought.
I think that's enough.
I have hardly started. Here's another one. They asked Sir Harcourt Master, late Receiver General of the Land Tax for London and Middlesex, to account for what public money he had laid out in stock or subscription or otherwise applied to his own private use. Do you know what he replied?
I expect you are about to tell me.
He said he had used his best endeavours to distinguish between these sums, but now listen to this. He, not having kept any account of the government's money, distinct and separate from other monies that were his own, or others that passed through his hands, he found it impracticable for him to give an account thereof, so particularly as he was requested. It's a quagmire of greed and corruption. The secret committee will keep digging, and who knows what they will find. There are lots of names in here, even including the Chancellor of the Exchequer. And petitions have been delivered to the House of Commons from across the country. Here is one. It's from the County of Warwick. The petitioners crave leave, etc., etc. Ah, here it is. It is to the late treacherous managers of the South Sea Company, their abettors and confederates, that they owe the loss of public credit, the present deadness of trade, and the utter ruin of many families who, from great affluence and esteem, are sunk at once into poverty and reproach. So you see, Defoe, the contagion that has spread throughout the nation was created right at its heart. You can deny it no longer.
Antonia!
I have no time for you.
Father.
No.
Did you know about this? Speak to me, Father. You frightened me when you were silent.
No. Not yet.
It is truly shocking. I don't understand why men who are already wealthy would stoop to such contemptible behaviour. Help me, Father. Why did they do it?
Oh, it's the invincible fever of avarice upon the minds of men. Avarice knows no bounds, has no limitations to its desires, no laws to its voracious grasp after wealth. How else could men of quality and of honour, men of immense fortunes and wealth, men of high posts and places, stoop to so mean a thing as to increase their wealth out of the ruin of their country?
But government officials too.
Those great officers of state, who being entrusted with the defence of the government and with the weight of public prosperity resting upon their shoulders, in whose supposed wisdom and probity the whole nation rested secure, but who, under the cover of that trust, swallow up and devour the people who entrust them, enriching themselves with the plunder of the nation and using that power which is given them for the public good as a screen to corruption.
What will happen to them?
Their names should be consigned over to posterity with a mark of infamy as the worst sort of stewards and the worst sort of traitors to their country. I cannot give them a better title. There. My rant is done. I am restored.
Oh, Father.
I'm sorry if I frightened you, but I did feel...
Betrayed?
In a way. And also something of a fool.
The whole world knows you are no fool.
Thank you. Let's say no more for now.
But you will write about this.
Oh, yes, I will write. As friend Jeremiah would say, I will smite them with my pen and ink.
I look forward to it. There is another letter in the newspaper.
No more.
This is a happy story. A happy bubble story at last. Dear sir, A certain young gentleman near Covent Garden had no sooner got above £40,000 by the South Sea traffic than he forgot a beautiful and virtuous lady that he was upon the point of being married to. However, according to the uncertain rotation of human affairs, this same gentleman, half a year later, was stripped of all, having lost his fortune. He thereupon put on a bold face, for he had no other game to play, and came to his quondam mistress and told her his case, and, in short, that he was reduced to needing 5 or 6 guineas, to which she replied, "I am glad of that with all my heart." "Are you so, madam?" he said. "Why so?" "Because," she said, "I can give you 5 or 6,000. And so she did, and herself into the bargain. Isn't that pleasing?
It is indeed. Thank you.
And now I think we need some fresh air. Shall we take a walk?
A good idea. Let's go. Oh, I nearly forgot. I have a present for you.
What is it?
Here, open it.
Stock in the South Sea Company to the value of £706.13.04.
You have been such a help to me. I thought you deserved something fitting.
You are so mischievous.
Me? Mischievous?
And after everything you've said and written.
Ah, but that was when the bubble was out of control. It is a sound investment now, at a proper price. And it's got immunity.
Immunity to what?
To bubble fever.
You have been listening to Bubble Fever by David Fletcher, based on the works of Daniel Defoe and other sources of the period. The play was directed by David Fletcher, with music composition and sound design by Jonathan Fletcher. The recording was produced by Jonathan Fletcher. Daniel Defoe was played by Robert Lowe, Hannah by Laura Haywood, Sedley by Mark Roberts, Cavendish by Mark Pierce, Susanna by Siobhan Toomey, A Stock Jobber by David Fletcher, Antonia by Hilary Beaton, Lady Mary by Lucinda Toomey, Catherine by Vicky Holding, Florentina by Tracy James, The Visitor to London by Lynn Fairbairn, A Chimney Sweep by Mark Pierce, and Jeremiah Dryboots by Mark Roberts. The play was presented by the Loft Theatre in association with the University of Warwick History Department.